All right, back here on Bird 365 on this day of the NFL draft. It is finally here, John McMullen. And you know who is finally here? It is Colin Thompson, free agent NFL tight end, not for long media. He is building the media empire as we get ready for the NFL draft. But yo, it is great to see you, my friend. How are you, man?
Guys, great to be back. Two of my favorites in sports media, of course. Two guys I've worked a ton with, and it's great to be back on the show.
Yeah, it's good to see you, buddy. Exciting day, too. Draft day. Take us through that from a player's perspective and what it's like to sit around. Obviously, you know, your stage when you were coming out, you weren't going to be on day one. It shifted. It's not as fun as it used to be where you had Saturday and Sunday. But what, you know, from a player's perspective, when you're waiting for that call, what's it like? You got friends and family around? Everybody's different, but how did you handle it?
Yeah, so I actually handle it not too far from where you guys are at in Cape May, New Jersey. We're at my parents' house down there, and I knew I was going to be undrafted. But how that goes, and for those that don't know, about a third to sometimes a little bit more of the NFL is undrafted football players, which is crazy because we put such a precedence on this NFL draft thing and all the underwear Olympics and the combine and the 40s. And most of the undrafted guys, for whatever reason, don't go. So we were down in Cape May, and it's I would say the part of the story is for the undrafted guy, about 72 hours before, teams start to call out of nowhere, right? You'd be like, hi, this is so-and-so from the Atlanta Falcons. I'll never forget that one. I'm like working out. I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, I want to know what your draft day phone number is. I don't know. They have my number. Yeah. And they want to know, you know, just whatever. What are you doing? What's your plans? How you feeling? What's your update, right? Because what they're doing is, and you'll get a call. I tell my agent, I'm like, there's been 25 teams. I'm barely supposed to go undrafted.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is fishing, almost recruiting in a way that, hey, listen, you're going to go undrafted. And if you're available, we want you to think Atlanta Falcons or Philadelphia Eagles, or for my case, it was the New York Giants, because you're like, oh, like you're almost like, oh, they called me, like they want me, you know? Well, really, you're just the tight end that fell through the cracks, and they're like, oh, this is our top guy on the board that's still available. So I got a bunch of calls about 72 hours before, and then on draft day, on the third day, you know, on the final day, Maiden's like, you may get taken here. We got teams calling, like, what's Colin doing? How's he feeling? You get to the later rounds, right? They start finding guys for select things. So if you have a completed roster, Colin's blocking tight end, we need a guy that can come in on third and short and get things done, whatever. That's what my agents are telling me that they're calling about. And of course they're saying, we may take you with this next pick. Every undrafted player and every guy that I played in the XFL with tells the same story. Well, yeah, you know, in the sixth round, the Broncos called and they have the next three picks. And, you know, they're thinking about, they didn't take me though, but they said they were going to, right? We all had the same one.
Yeah.
In my case, I had the same story where we're sitting there like in the sixth round and we know I'm not getting taken. We're just waiting around for the undrafted part. And my phone rings from Denver, or I think it was Denver, was like, hey, they got three picks here in the sixth round. Like, Colin, you may be one of them. My agents are calling me. I'm like, no way. You got to be shit. It gets a little hype in the room.
Yeah.
And then it comes back to reality. The draft ends.
Well, that was my next question. How did they approach it? Because when they want you as an undrafted guy, you know, they don't wait till after the draft. So in the seventh round, those calls start to come in. Yeah. Do they approach it that way and saying, hey, we might take you here, but if not, start thinking about the New York Giants?
Yeah, that's exactly how it went. So for me, it was the Rams, which, again, it wasn't the Rams at the time that they are now. It doesn't matter. I didn't care at that point either. I make that clear. It was the Rams, the Raiders, and the Giants. Now, the Rams and Raiders, zero contact with me at all through it. I had a rookie mini camp where I had a rookie like local tryout with the Jets, did horrible. It was like horrible footwork drills that to me have nothing to do with tight end stuff. No disrespect to that tight end coach, but we ran around cones the whole time and I'm not that guy. Like, and I get that. That's a valued thing, but like, that's not for me as like a physical tight end. So I didn't do well there. I did okay with the Eagles, and I haven't had a ton of contact with the Eagles throughout my career, just a little bit, but the Giants contacted a lot through the process. I had a lot of mutual friends there through like Kevin Gilbride, who coached at Temple. Rule coached with the Giants 3 years before that as the assistant line coach. So a lot of the Temple guys were getting a lot of Giants love. because Rule could speak about all of us. So to move the story along, it was those three teams in the undrafted process. My agent's like, listen, the Giants are the best deal. Also, Kevin Gilbride, tight end coach, works with my agents as well, right? So there's that rapport. This was Pro Star Sports at the time, my agency at the time. And yeah, they're just like, my agent's like, we're going to take this deal. I'm like, what do you mean? What's the deal? They're like, hey, we're going to give, they're going to give you $4,500. I'm like, do we have a negotiation back? They're like, no, it's great. You're a rookie minicamp guy holding a bag and a tryout. And now you're going to sign a contract and probably not get cut during the rookie minicamp because they gave you some cash. A little bit.
Yeah. Andrew Brandt's got that great story where he wanted to sign somebody and he was giving him like $5,000. And the poor guy was saying, well, can I have a couple weeks to come up with the money? And he's like, no, we're paying you.
That's how it went. So I took the $4,500 and it was an amazing day. We went to the old Sea View down there in Cape May, pumped the jukebox full of money and sang till 2 a.m. like I was the first pick overall. And it was something I'll never forget. We got great pictures. One of our friends, these are all diehard, nobody cared. I was very emotional. A lot of those people have been with me through my entire career, which was full of ups and downs like the rest of us in the NFL. And one of the guys disappeared. I know it when one of our neighbors, he disappeared in the middle of it, right when the Giants thing was coming down. Took off to the local sporting goods store, bought every piece of Giants memorabilia, shirts, hats, jerseys. So everybody at the Sea View for the one time and one time only was wearing Giants gear in Eagles Park. Nice. So it was cool. And it's a memory I'll never forget. And yeah, went to the Giants emergency appendectomy and signed that nice $2 million deal and only saw $4,500 out of it. So that's how it goes. And I was doing radio with you guys.
That's an NFL contract for you, right? It looks like this big
$2 million. Yeah.
Colin Thompson, by the way, local guy, as he mentioned, Cape May. He trains there in his off seasons during his career. And then, of course, where'd you go? Archbishop Ryan, right?
I went to Archbishop Wood, close.
Yeah, up in Philly. Played at Florida and then transferred to Temple. So local ties all over the place, down the Jersey Shore, the Philadelphia area. So You mentioned you've meandered through AAF, XFL. You land on the Carolina Panthers and spent, three seasons in Carolina. So now it's draft day and you're on a team. What's it like for someone who's on a team when you're hearing all of the draft buzz? Give the people a little bit of insight on that kind of feeling. Okay, I'm on this team. And everyone is talking about what this team needs and what changes are coming. What's an offseason like for a player on a roster?
So 2020 season, I probably had my best year of football. We didn't have a ton of tight ends in the room in Carolina. It was a blocking tight end, Chris Manhertz, who's actually with the Giants now. He's a great blocking tight end, played basketball at Canisius College, didn't play football to the NFL. So I had that advantage over Chris, essentially, now he was a great pro at the time. So I was like, Chris, Ian Thomas, who I think is one of the more well-rounded tight ends in the league, got paid for it in Carolina. And then myself and a practice squad tight end. So 2020 played great. I'm coming back 2021, pretty much guaranteed for the roster. 6 months before that, I'm getting – the XFL shutting down because of COVID. 6 months before that, the AAF's shutting down, right? Yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to make this. I'm doing radio with you guys, Tony Bruno. We're all over the place. So that's a little snippet into an NFL career and life, right? And all of a sudden, like – a year later, you're like, I'm good for the draft, right? Like, you're not drafting a guy. I got a couple years left on a rookie deal. We got some depth in the room. We just signed receiving tight end Dan Arnold, who I'm shocked.
Dan Arnold, he was here for a short period. You and I were talking about that. I love Dan Arnold as a receiver, but
for the way the Eagles use tight ends, I thought they would have practice squatted him. Because Dan's a really good football player and tough. Yeah. And I was shocked he didn't stick in Philly. That blew me away. And I think he's retired. He's going to coach D3
football. I'm going to guess who you're going to bring up. Tommy Tremble.
100%. Yeah. You're 100% correct. So I'm sitting in the room. And I gave a little backstory because I think it's part of the story. So I'm sitting in the room. I'm happy. I get a text from a good friend of mine. And he's followed me through my whole career. And he's like, what's the deal with draft? Can it affect you at all? I said, I don't think so. There's no real tight end in this draft that they would take that I think would affect me. But I remember this kid at Notre Dame, and everybody sent me his stuff. Everyone was sending me his video. Look at this guy. He's a nut job. He just runs through people, and he's physical. I'm like, he is nuts, and he runs really fast. He's a freak of nature. I'm like, no, I'm good. Literally 10 minutes later, third round comes around, they draft Tommy Tremble. I look him up real quick. I'm like, oh, no. I'm done. I'm toast. This kid's going to beat me out, right? And it's not to do with like, oh, he's a better player than me, better athlete than me and all that, but just numbers game, right? Third round pick, you're done. They gave him a bunch of money. And so I ended up being in and out of the active roster all year, which was a good run. I probably played like 13 games that year inactive for a couple, and I was good. But the ripple effect was the next year, right? They draft another kid, right? And all of a sudden, you're finding yourself kind of weaning out of the back of the room. So for your point, Mike, to back to the question that, of course, I took forever to answer, is it's stressful in the sense that, yeah, you can't worry about it. You got to control your own stuff. But your career and your fate could be decided like that with maybe a tight end in the third round and a tight end in the seventh round. And you're like, well, I'm out of the room.
So what about, like, for instance, right now in Philly, Dallas Goedert, who's an established player, and you've been on my show many times saying how much, you know, you think he's one of the top tight ends, all around tight ends in the league.
Yep.
But you hit an age in this league. Is he thinking, watching this draft tonight, thinking they're going to start looking for my replacement? Like, there's been some Brock Bowers talk. Now, they would have to move up probably to do so, but is he in a spot where they drafted him in the second round essentially to replace Zach Ertz? They ended up trading Ertz 2 years later. So
same age, by the way. They drafted Dallas Goedert when Zach was 29, coming off phenomenal seasons. He set the franchise record. And now Dallas is 29.
Yeah.
And, you know, so
they might. Yeah, guys, I'm 30. Yeah, that number – if you're 29 years old and 364 days, you're a young player in the NFL. If you're 30 years old, you're an old player in the NFL. And it happens just like that. And it's just numbers. It's just facts. It's just over the years, right? It's just how it goes. And it sucks for a guy like me, who I'm actually in the best shape of my life. I feel better than I ever been. I know the game better than I've ever been. But the opportunities are less because, hey, there's seven draft classes between you and the first time you came into this league. So for Dallas, right, like, I think that was a value pick for Dallas, right? Like, he happened to be there in the second round. They're like, holy cow, this guy, we have a first-round grade on this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Dallas is a freak of nature, right? I was able to spend some time with Dallas this offseason. The guy's a freak of nature. Like, he's a different cat in the sense that, like, big, strong, fast, like, kind of Gumby-ish, like, long, like, twitchy and strong. And, like, the Kittle's built like that. Like, a couple guys are built like that. Not everybody's built like that in this league. There's a couple guys that have had to earn it and, like, build themselves to be these big, strong dudes. But, like, Dallas is, like, just a big dude and a really good player and physical. Like, he has all the attributes. He's got the attitude. Like, he's a good player. He'll play forever in this league probably. But you know how Howie Roseman works, right? So I'm sure they're gonna have to take a guy. Jack Stoll left, right? So,
yeah.
I know they signed some guys that were kind of guys like me, right?
In TJ and off Uzama, who's
Rams, right? Or of Denver.
Probably 32, 33. So it was kind of a weird signing for.
Yeah.
But he's played a lot of football. Yeah. With Dallas, I wanted to ask you, because you're right, he's so physical.
Yeah.
The past couple of years, Colin, he's gotten hurt. Mm-hmm. And last year, he got hurt being physical. You know, he wins those angry runs. Oh, I don't know if you see Kyle Brandy.
Oh, every morning. Guy's fantastic.
And, he gave him the Angry Run Award twice. And one time when he won it is when he broke his forearm because he's destroying the guy.
Yeah.
And at some point as a player, when you're out there, when it comes to that physicality versus protecting yourself, how difficult is that line?
Well, for me, I don't play that line because I'll lose my job. But for a guy like him, he, you know, you have to be. It's a shame. It's really weird. It's like that core belief that got you to where you are. I'd be like, you guys do radio and you have a couple staples, and I'm just going to change them because I'm getting a little longer in the tooth now and I don't want to get tired. It's like, well, no, that staples what got you there. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to sacrifice more, right? It's all the same thing in every profession. You have to pivot. And sometimes when you pivot, it's a 50-50 shot. You're playing the long game, right? So I have a good story here. I'm not going to name a franchise or I'm not going to name a player, but there's a guy I played with in the NFL who told me a story, and it was a previous team that he played with that they weren't allowed to run out of bounds as a tight end. Weren't allowed to. And that's a common thing in college, right? Very common. Running backs, tight ends, we don't run out of bounds. Receivers, run out of bounds. Don't get hurt. And that's changed over the years, right? This is a couple of years ago. And he said to me that one of their top tight ends didn't go out of bounds and ran through a guy and should have ran out of bounds and wanted to and ended up getting hurt and costing him pretty much the middle part of his career. Long story short, that person, that player went and freaked out at that coach, right? Because you can do that in the NFL. It's not normal, but it happens a lot. And the tight end coach had to change his core beliefs because it took money out of that player's pocket, right? So fans don't see it because they want fantasy points and they want you to, you know, whatever. It's no big deal. You run out of bounds and you would, like, if it's not like egregiously running out of bounds, right, then it's no big deal. But now a lot of guys will jump out of bounds because, hey, we'll live this play another down. We got to play fast. It's up-tempo offense. Like, that's what Chip Kelly was like. Just get out of bounds. Let's go. Let's move. So, you know, it's a great question for Dallas. But I would suggest that, yeah, the older he gets, you got to be able to protect yourself a little bit more. You look at Travis Kelce. What makes Travis Kelce great is not that he's, like, straight line fast or big and strong. Is he's like Gumby. I mean, the guy can just drop down and, like, miss a hit. And the guy can just, like, kind of suave out of the way and, like,
yeah,
looks like there's four guys that are in gang tackle him and just tattoo him. And then he's just like, boop, I just fall. Like, that's what makes him great. That's what makes Christian McCaffrey, the older he's gotten, talking to him is like, I need to know how to, like, go numb when I'm getting tackled. You just kind of, you just kind of loosen up so the guys don't, like, you don't fight against it and you snap, right? Because that's the amount of force being used. Yeah. So they'll probably take a guy or they'll trade for nose, right? So,
I think from our conversations over the years, I think you said Sean Desai was in Chicago when you were there, right?
Yes.
So everybody assumes the Eagles need a corner and that they would trade up to get one. When you watch the Eagles defense, is it a talent deficiency? Was Sean just not the right guy for this team? Was Fangio there when you were in Chicago, by the way?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Both of them.
So give
both
us a little.
Sean's a direct disciple of
direct. I laughed at this.
Yeah.
Is Vic going to be much different from Sean? Kind of give us your take. You were an offensive player there, but you know these two men. How do you see that dynamic of what the defense might change to look like? And if they need to add a defensive player because they're deficient on that side, or was it more of a disconnect with Sean?
I think there'll be one cook in the kitchen this year because he's tenured, and older and established and a former head coach and a 15-year DC in the NFL. Sean Desai, guys, I think unfairly ripped apart.
I agree with you, Colin. I said this all the time. I keep hearing, and this is what you hear when you cover a team, Colin, when things go wrong and guys are let go and they're kicked out the door, then you start hearing the bad stuff. I keep hearing the word presence. You didn't have a presence. I'm like, and Vic will have that presence. Nobody can say that about Vic Fangio. He's been coaching forever.
Guys, this is a soft-spoken man in Vic. We're talking about presence.
Yeah.
This isn't Dan Campbell where he walks in the room and you're like,
Holy shit. There's different kinds of presence, though. It's a real thing because I cover Jim Schwartz. Jim Schwartz has a freaking presence. He takes over a room.
Yeah.
Even Jonathan Gannon, as a young coach, had a presence, you know, former player. Looked like he could still play. He still had it. And Sean's, you know, he's got a master's in education. So he goes about it a different way. But I'm like, that's bull crap.
It is.
Yeah.
I played for one of the best tight end coaches, I think, in the NFL, Brian Angelico. Brian Angelico is a two-sport Division III athlete. Okay, he's Brian's probably 5'10". Whatever he is. Overweight. I'll say that for him. He looks good. He's a good friend of mine. He lost a bunch of weight. He looks great. Yeah. I think he's one of the best tight end coaches in the NFL.
He's in Minnesota now, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And he recruited me to Rutgers and Pitt back in the day. We have a long history. But Brian didn't play in the NFL. Brian's not that big of a guy. Brian's best attribute is to be able to relate to his players on a personal level and say, all right, man, here's how we're going to execute on it. And we got to rock and roll. Like, period. That's why I get all wound up about this, is players don't get enough of the blame, right?
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair. We help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
because fans can't articulate the blame in the media side.
Well, they don't want to blame the players. They want their favorite players to be.
Well, I think a lot of more of it is they understand they can't do the player's job, but they think they can do
coach's job.
The coach's job or the GM's job. Like, if you let me do that, I would have picked the right guy. If you let me coach this team, I would call the right play.
Yeah.
If you told me to block, I know I'm not capable of that. So that's where the blame goes to the person that they identify that I could do that job if you made me. And that's where I think a lot of that blame comes from. But, you know, you talked about Vic. There'll be one voice in that room. And you guys are talking about Sean. You know, the defense, and you said it, he runs a similar style of defense, but I guess – different enough that they thought that bringing Vic in to run a similar style of defense was the right way to go.
What John said, they're bringing in the presence, right? They're bringing in a presence where the players are going to look and say, that's Vic Fangio, because they're pretty much what they're saying, I guess, through something that people are hearing. Presence is when stuff was hitting the fan and we needed a voice to be like, go run and make tackles and play with effort and energy. Sean was like, hey, we got to run and make tackles and play with energy. And we know that. That's a constant in the NFL. I'm assuming this is how it's going, right? I've been in these rooms before. You have Ben McAdoo who comes in, who's a presence like Vic, and swings a big hammer and is like, what the hell are we doing? And then you have Jeff Nixon, who's now the OC at Syracuse. And he was a kind of Matt Rhule guy, came as a running backs coach. He played coach with the Niners, coach with the Eagles, Knicks. And Knicks came in and said, guys, we got to execute inside zone, right? There's different tones to things. And to me, I'm the player where you got to, like, they wanted someone, a coach, to really make up for the deficiencies of whatever that defense was. And they thought that it needs to be an MF session, if you will, instead of probably an educational session. And to me, it's just different styles. They wanted a bit, Vic's just got this, like, kind of Italian, broad-shouldered, kind of quiet, like too quiet where you can't even like have a read on him. One time I connected with him in Chicago is when we talked about Italian restaurants, like all over the outskirts of Chicago, like in these little towns. He was great. Him and Vikings DC got fired 2 years ago. His son's in the NFL, coaching too.
Not Alan Williams. He was
I'm sorry, but long story short, he's a great guy too. I'm killing me forgetting his name. It's the morning, but long story short.
Ed Donatel, you're talking about?
Donatel. Yeah. So Donatel was his DB's coach. Yeah, yeah. And Ed's the best. Ed is the one. They're both a great guy, and they would go to these little tiny.
Well, Ed's a big Fangio guy.
Yeah, so they run a lot of zone,
and
they put a lot of presence on the big boys up front, which is what the Eagles were doing a little bit last year, and they got away from it. So my point is, and I know I'm long-winded and we're off the rails, there's a voice in the room. Sean took the hit for last year. It's a shame. Hit his career probably pretty hard. And so, he's a smart, really, really smart person. Like, this is someone who's not intelligent.
When you look at that Eagles, whatever the heck that was, both coordinators, did they take the fall or were they not ready for the job? They brought in two guys that are well established.
That's what I've said from day one. Scapegoats,
Colin. It is what it is. Like, at the end of the day, it didn't get done, right? I talk about this in Carolina. I think Matt Rhule's an excellent football coach. People say he's a college coach. Well, we did the same things they do in New England and Baltimore. I know all the guys there. The same things. Literally the same. And even Matt says it. But we lost. So you're labeled as a college guy, right? Like, if we win, you can win, right? So at the end of the day, like, whatever, whoever's fault it was, the job didn't get done the way they wanted to get done. And it's got to fall somewhere. We can't cut all these players because it's going to be a dead cap hit, right? We can't cut. We got to trade a guy or whatever. That maybe we can do that. But, like, no one's one player is to blame.
That becomes the realization, right? When you come from the college game, though, it's in college you can do X, Y, or Z. There's no salary. Well, maybe there's some money now. But the salaries dictate sometimes decisions.
100%. Oh, yeah. Right? Look at some of these defenses like Pittsburgh, right? It's like 75% of their money on the salary caps on the defense side of the football. You better perform. Like that coordinator better perform. Like, so there was holes going in the year last year.
The coordinator might not be able to make the player personnel decision he wants based on the salary that he's handcuffed with.
No, and by the way, from a player's perspective, Colin, because, you know, this is what I've heard from players throughout the years. What you want out of a coach, be it position coach, coordinator, even head coach, is to take it a little bit farther than where you can go yourself versus, you know, if you don't have talent, you could be the best coach in the world. You still ain't winning. Mm-hmm. You might be a little bit better than what you would have been with an average coach or a mediocre coach. But
like, for
Bill
example,
Belichick didn't become a bad coach overnight.
No, that's ridiculous. That, yeah. Is he out of the league? Can he keep up? With, come on. I just,
yeah.
He's nothing. No,
for example, you know, and this isn't to, I mean, say that they should have or did or thought about it, but like James Bradberry is getting paid a certain amount of money. Well, we'd like to see Ringo or Ricks, but we really can't do that because we're paying Bradberry so much.
And he earned that money. He played really well the year before. Yeah. So that's the question, is like, who's that
right,
on?
But at what point during the season does the coach say, I couldn't, I'd like to have changed this particular position, but I couldn't because of what he was getting paid.
Oh, that's why the NFL is unreal, because there's so many layers to it, right? Like, we got to put this guy in. Well, you can't. I'm the general manager. You're not playing him. I'm paying that person X. They got to be out there. I'm sorry, but, and you know it, all of our hands are tied, every one of us. So yeah. That's the league, man. The league is that's what I always say. And there's great insiders. John's one of them. John knows a lot that he can't tell. I can guarantee it. But at the end of the day, I give it the 10% rule to fans. 10% of what you're reading, 10% of what you're hearing from a media conference, 10% of what you're reading on Twitter is true. 10% of it is. But the rest of the 90%, I played this game in Carolina. I played it with the New York Giants when I was a rookie. I wanted to see. I followed it all on Twitter. I followed all the local news because I'm doing this stuff with you guys. And then I get to be in the building and do the math, right? And it's not discrediting the media or, hey, it's not. But the stuff that happens, somebody may get cut. No, well, he just got cut because of X. But there could be 50 reasons why, and we'll never know him because he upset a GM. He was late to a meeting. He did something to a worker, somebody at work. You don't know, right? So it's just, that's the business. It is complex, and there's
a lot. Well, we're seeing it on a day like today, Colin, where – the last minute stuff that comes out before the draft, you're just like, what am I supposed to do
don't
with this?
Read anything.
The draft is the best because so many people have so much certainty. I know this guy. And it's like you either draft a good player or a bad player. There's development, there's system, there's scheme. Yeah. Jason Kelce talked about it, Colin, at his retirement press conference. He said he played with two players that would have been successful regardless of scheme, coaches, philosophy. And he played forever. And he said two. He said Fletch and he said Jason Peters. That's it. And everybody else is some dependent, including himself, on other things. Now, you might want to add Lane to that list, in my opinion. Maybe AJ.
Lane, but, sure.
Certain guys, I think.
But that still shows you, though.
Still, though. Yeah, that's still very small number.
But think about this. He kept Lane out, and Lane's one of his best friends because he probably knows something, right? Again, the 90-10%, he gave you 10% of, like, Lane needed this coach or Lane needed this system or Lane may have needed Howie Roseman or Lane struggled with some mental health stuff, right? So maybe he needed the Eagles organization who was open to letting him take some time off. Other organizations would be like, are you serious, right? So, again, he's telling us something there, right? Like, you don't know what it is, but there's that other, like, you know, the iceberg, if you will, or you can't see the bottom of it. So that's a perfect example, John, of these guys. Like, so that's why you take best available, because the freaky guys are the guys that usually make it.
Yeah. How cognizant are the players in the moment of the front offices and that kind? Is that something that, like, once you're kind of older, you're like, man, those guys control. Like, when you're young, are you as cognizant of, like, how Philadelphia does their job and how Howie Roseman is thought of around the league, or how much you guys think about that in the moment?
That's a great question. I think it just depends on the player, right? Like, guy like me, I become friends with everybody in the building. I start getting, you know, I'm start contact talking people, different things. People start asking you opinions about players.
You're looking for those breakfast spots. I always saw that out in Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. That was great. Connecting with the fans, different things. So like, it just depends on the type of player. Some guys literally put their head down, don't say a word and come to work. Right. And then they come in at 8, they leave at 5 and they're unbelievable. Right. Some like it's just like a normal workplace, Mike. Some people are like, oh, what are they doing? What's going on in HR and marketing? What's going on up there, right? Or some people are like, nah, I'm just going to show up and be the best version of me. And right, so it's literally a microcosm of society of like, some people are curious like I am, and like not a mole, but like someone who's like talking to my boys in the front office, like, hey, what's going on? What are we doing? Trade deadlines,
right?
You know, and then some guys are like, you know, coming in dressed to the nines, like they're going to, you know,
like Monte Smith, baby.
Yeah, for practice, right? Cam Newton's like that, Hassan Reddick, right? And then some guys are like me coming in, look like you just, you know, whatever, you're going on spring break, you got a polo and khakis on, you know, whatever. It's just like it's a whole different thing. It's just like society in a way. I say it's a healthier version because we can have
I'm with you. I've talked about that for a long time at Colin Thompson TU. Make sure you follow Colin on X, Twitter at Not For Long Media, not the number 4 Long Media. Does a tremendous job. Superstar in this industry as well, as far as I'm concerned. The guys, Kelsey was one of those guys, by the way, the flip flops, the Ocean Drive shirt, just showing the one time he's got he had the premiere of, his Amazon show, Colin, and he forgot his jeans. He had to call Kylie to bring his jeans for the premiere.
All everybody loves that. Everyone's like, he's just like us, you know, like, which is great. And that's all people want is fans. I think
he just announced he's doing his bartending thing down at the OD again this year. And of course, that's a charity event, but it turns into him playing flip cup with the fans. And
people are saying he probably, I had a buddy there, Sam Boner Mick. And Mick was like, I think he easily had 50 plus beers. 50 plus.
Yeah.
I mean, he's paying. And another thing too is Kylie's behind him. This was from my buddy Jimmy Morrissey, who works the event. I think Jimmy told me 50 plus. Mick was there and shot a beer with him. But my buddy Jimmy worked the event, plays for the New York Giants now. LaSalle High School kid, played a pit. And Jimmy's like, dude, like literally Kylie's behind him. They're like, yeah, West Virginia. Nice school, Mike. So
Zach Frazier getting drafted early second round.
Okay. Yeah. So literally, like Kylie will be behind him. And I'll be like, hey, Jason, a shotgun of beer. I wasn't there last year, right? And I think they raised like a couple hundred thousand, right? Crazy. And first off, other thing, side note, what Jason did for guys like me to be able to talk about drinking in public and eating sandwiches and all that, like you could do that as a player before. You could not. When I said I'm going to start a podcast in 2017, I think I was the first NFL player to have one. My agent's like, you're nuts. You're crazy.
I said, you're nuts. I said, I've asked you that question 100 times. I go, how does that go over in buildings?
Yeah, don't care as long as you play well.
And you were the first for people that don't know.
Yeah,
you were the first, and I was, obviously Jason and Travis
have
become, you know,
a lot of guys have John, which is great. New media, but to finish my story, like Kylie's right behind him when all three of us walk up to Jason, like Jason, we want to chug a beer. Great, Kylie's like, no, Jason, how much is it? And Jason would be like, sorry guys, it's $250 a guy or $150 a donation a guy to chug a beer with me. And so Jason's just like whacking beers and he just raised like a grand like that. So like, it's unbelievable. And it's so
cool. Charging people to chug with them.
It's great for charity. Cause if not, it's just get bombed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. It is great for charity.
For the kids.
So are you still into the draft? Are you going to sit here and digest this whole thing the next 3 days?
I'll be watching the whole thing. I'll probably, you know, get emotional one point of time of it. I've never year. I'm like, it's whatever. And then all of a sudden I'm like, man, you know, I'll be so into it. I can't wait for it.
How good is Brock Bowers? Fellow tight end. How good is he?
I don't even think we really know how good he is. I think we see how good he is in college and he's outrunning guys and he's physical. I mean, he's like Kittle to me, but like, I think there's a ceiling on him that we don't know. And I think we're going to see it in the NFL. And that's what makes people excited. You're like, man, this cat could be something different. I mean, he's going to probably be a piece of an offense where they probably already have some players already, which is great. Sometimes when you're drafting the first 5 picks, right, you're like, man, I got to carry this load, right? Saquon Barkley in New York. People aren't talking about how good that guy's going to be in Philly, but that's neither here nor there. Brock is a monster. And I, you know what I see happen this year, guys, personally? I think people are going to take this model of the Houston Texans, where they have a high pick and they're going to mortgage the future to go get another high pick, a player they like. I do. I think that's really was, I mean, look what Houston did. Hire the right head coach.
They did a hell of a job. They turned it over
quick.
Boom.
Boom. And that sold out state, I mean, playoff game. I mean, the team looked great. Court, and the players are getting hurt everywhere, but Will Anderson's upright. CJ Stroud's upright. Great head coach. Great GM, Caserio, who was all behind the scenes in New England for the entire Bill Belichick era there, for a lot of it, at least, from a coach and front office perspective. He was the GM when Bill had a coach, essentially. So, yeah, I think I see it. My opinion on the draft is someone's going to trade up and take, you know, take a guy or two there, like middle. I think it's going to be an aggressive year. It always is. It's getting more aggressive. The NBA started it a couple years ago with free agency.
That's my Sean Payton theory. Sean says, if you like a player, go get him. Go get him, man.
Well, we'll see who's going. I would imagine Howie Roseman will be going and getting somebody. He will not sit at 22 tonight. Who will it be? Well, we have just hours to go to find out. Alan Thompson spent the time with us today.
Analytics.
Not for long media. And check him out, Colin Thompson, on his Not For Long Media platform. And kind enough to get up a little early. Where are you, in Florida?
I'm in Central Time, too.
Yeah.
So I'm on the grind here for you guys. West Florida. You get
West Florida.
Destin. Nice little spot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my in-law's got a great little spot here. So take a little break from the training. Get start training
Central
again.
Central Time?
Isn't that crazy? It's the best.
Crazy to me. Yep. I did not know that existed.
Isn't what is it, over in the panhandle? What's it in the panhandle?
Yeah.
Between Panama City and Destin is where I'm at. Yeah. So if
you're living the dream, by the way, Colin. Yeah, where are you? You're Annapolis, Cape May, Florida, the panhandle. You're everywhere I want to be. I'm stuck in South Jersey.
Hey, man, I'm very fortunate to do this, but it's coming to an end soon. We're about to have a little girl. So it's the end is near in late July for me and my wife. Funny story quickly. Gil comes down to Annapolis. I'm like, Mike, I'm in, buddy. We're going out, drinking, coming to the Navy game, ECU. His girlfriend's an ECU grad. You bring the kids, the whole nine. Morning of the game.
Right.
I'm going to get up. I'm going to meet Mike down at the tailgate, start a little day drinking, morning drinking. Exciting, right? So my wife comes down during breakfast. We haven't really talked, nothing, right? Whatever. I'm going to go make breakfast. Comes down the steps, holds a pregnancy test in front of my eyes.
Oh,
I'm pregnant. Yeah. So I was like, Mike, tough day. I couldn't say anything yet. We just found out. I'm like, sorry, buddy. Next time.
Well, congratulations, dad. Coming.
My buddy, like that. My buddy had parked at his house. So we walked to his house with my buddy to get the car, and I knock on the door, and his wife answered the door as if like, what are these people doing at our house?
I pretty much didn't. I was like, yeah, no plans today. We're just going to relax.
Was a couple sheets to the wind, by the way. So
hey, that's fine. It was excellent.
Oh, wow. You know, we were out there, as he said, all morning at the tailgate. I was excited to see my buddy down in his stomping grounds. We were going to do the whole Annapolis thing.
Broke my heart, Mike.
Hey, congratulations to you, buddy.
It broke my heart, Mike. So,
right, Colin Thompson, everybody. Thanks, man.
Thanks guys. Bud.
Colin Thompson, Not For Long Media. Great stories there. Great insight. Sean Desai.
Always has great stories, man.
Yeah, he played in Chicago with Sean, was, I guess, an assistant at the time. He was the coordinator for when Vic left, but he wasn't the coordinator at that
one
point.
Year. No, but he wasn't the coordinator then. Colin got to be with the Vikings last year, and they got this brand new facility. I talked to him about that.
He loved it there.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. So when we come back, we're going to get down and dirty with Andrew DiCecco from Inside the Birds. He'll give us a lot of insight on the last couple hours before the draft and what the Eagles could be thinking and doing. That is coming up next here on Birds 365.
Oh, O'Reilly. You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, O'Reilly.